Big show for you here today as Sal Vetri joins me for the Wednesday data dump. We have a ton to dive into. The Chiefs offense, some concerns there. The Texans offense hasn't really looked like the unit we expected this year. Meanwhile, Sal is very excited what he's seen in Minnesota and Carolina. Andy Dalton, Sam Darnold, saving NFL franchises everywhere. What a time to be alive. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Wednesday, September 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. It's a hell of a day to be back in the host chair. Appreciate Scott Pianowski pinch hitting for me. He is the absolute man. But like I said, it's good to be back. It's good to be talking ball. And it's good to be doing that with Sal Vetri on the Wednesday data dump. Sal, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much, man. Yeah, glad to be back another week of this. It's kind of feeling like that time of the year where you know where some of your fantasy teams stand. We kind of know where some of these real teams are starting to stand, some trends developing. And it's like, okay, which fantasy teams do I have to save at this point? Which ones do I feel good about? So that's where I'm at right now.
I feel the exact same way. I was texting with JJ Zacharyson over the weekend because he hit me up, such a nice guy to hit me up about this and, you know, say, I'm starting Juwan Jennings against you in two separate leagues. I'm getting the Juwan Jennings hammer drop. And I responded back to him, well, you know, it's funny because I'm starting him in two separate leagues as well. So it's that time of the year where like things are hurting you, but they're also helping you. And you do kind of know where some of these teams stand. So that really does feel like, you know, we're pivoting to week four. Obviously, this is the podcast where we pivot from week three to week four. We always do that here on this show. But this does feel like the time of the year, Sal, when things are starting to crystallize. Teams are starting to show us exactly who they are. Players and roles that you might have expected to be the case in the preseason, the offseason. It's kind of time to start letting that go and accepting the new reality, which I tried to focus on that with some of my stats here today. I think you did as well, which is really good. So let's waste no more time. Let's get into the post week three data dump.
Yes, science.
My calculations are correct. You're going to see some serious.
My first one here, Houston Texans passing offense. So far this year, it's been, I would say, fine. From a results standpoint, it's been fine. If you look at the efficiency metrics, Sal, it's actually not been that great. The Texans are 19th. In dropback EPA. They're 27th in dropback success rate, and they're 22nd in net yards per attempt. Obviously, a lot of this is coming off of a Vikings game against a Brian Flores defense that absolutely puts quarterbacks in the blender. The offensive line did not have a great showing against this Vikings team in week three. So, Sal, Texans offense, we still haven't gotten much from Tank Dell. It's been pretty good for Nico. It's been okay for Steph Diggs. Where are we at with the Texans right now and some of these guys that we had high expectations for coming into the year?
Yeah, high expectations, but there's always a piece of me that thought they were going to run more than people expected. We saw that last year. That's kind of how they wanted to set up this offense. And we got it in week one in like a dramatic way. 30 carries for Mixon against the Colts. In that game, the passing attack looked good as well. And since then, they faced the Bears and, like you mentioned, the Vikings and Brian Flores. Those are brutal matchups. Both of those defenses are top five in EPA per passing play allowed right now. So I kind of think maybe it's just a smaller sample. Maybe you're still trying to figure some things out with the addition of Stephon Diggs. How does that affect the rest of the offense with Joe Mixon not in there and having to fill it in with Cam Akers? So small sample, couple of tough matchups. Overall, I'm not really worried about what we're seeing. We're getting the stud usage out of Nico Collins. We started to get Tank Dell going last week and a couple of really strong games so far for Diggs. So for fantasy purposes, I think it's all pretty good and maybe it'll only get better based on the stats you're showing right now.
I think so, too. That's generally where I've been as well. I think all of these guys are, you know, probably going to have better rest of seasons than they've had so far. Maybe with I'm not going to say the exception of Nico just because, you know, I'm such a big Nico Collins fan. But I think some of these other guys will rise up here. You make great points about in week one, it really looked like the additions of Steph Diggs and Joe Mixon went about, okay, like that's exactly what you wanted. And then since then, obviously, Mixon he got hurt in week two. You know, I thought that was a big deal, having a run game that could keep them on schedule, because, you know, people can complain about it on Twitter and all this stuff, but this offense, this system is predicated on establishing some sort of run game. And, you know, we saw last season that when you don't have a running back who can be a difference maker on these zone blocking runs that they want to do. It's just not as good for the entire offense. So I think getting Mixon back healthy at some point, you know, obviously we'll see. That definitely is going to matter. I think the more that Diggs gets integrated, the more his role becomes clear. I think that will, you know, Tank Dell's a guy that people are still complaining about and all that, but there's just so much fantasy usage going to these wide receivers right now. You think at some point it will be better there. And I would also note, I noted this on a separate show last week. We got to remember that Tank Dell's coming off a serious injury. He got shot in the offseason. Like, maybe it's going to be a better second half of the year than first half of the year for Tank Dell.
Yeah, and I'll also note, I believe they play the Jaguars next week, which if anybody was watching Monday Night Football, yeah, and what the Bills were able to do in one half of play, what the Bills were able to do, I think that the Texans can find some success on offense against the Jaguars. Bold
Great
take.
Call. Yeah, bold take there. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely better. I think better days are ahead for this Houston Texans offense. You're right that not just the matchup against Brian Flores and the Vikings, but the Bears do have a good defense and especially an aggressive front too. Wondering if we do get improved play out of the offensive line as the season rolls on. Let's move on to my second stat here. Let's check in on the Bucs wide receivers after 3 weeks. First read target share. According to fantasy points data, Chris Godwin, 38.2%. Mike Evans, 21.8%. Air yard share. Chris Godwin, 39.4%. Mike Evans, 38.4%. Pretty close there. Targets per route run is hugely in favor of Chris Godwin at 0.31. Mike Evans, just 0.18. So, Sal, we know that Chris Godwin is, at this point, one of the best picks you could have made in your fantasy drafts, especially in those in that mid-round wide receiver range. The slot role, we've talked about that, just the way this offense has looked. Now, the Bucks got boat raced in week three here. The Broncos, big upset, really took it to them there. But are we at a point now with these two wide receivers where you're actually willing to rank Chris Godwin ahead of Mike Evans rest of season, or is this too small of a sample size to say that?
Yeah, I would say it's probably too small of a sample size, but it's a toss-up. Like, beginning of the season, you definitely wanted Mike Evans, and at this point, I think it is a toss-up. Like, it's probably a wash of a trade that you're not really trying to do at that point. Same right. position, same tier type of player. But I think it is that close. Godwin already exceeded his touchdown total from last year, matched his 2022 touchdown total. He looks great, but I'm not really panicked about Evans. Week one, he had the 24 fantasy point day, two touchdowns. Week two, they didn't throw a lot. I think they threw less than 20 times. Evans had a 30% target share in that game. And then week three, I think it's really skewing the sample here. Patrick Surtain, you only see three targets. I'm pretty sure Baker Mayfield, if there's one way to look, oh, Godwin's been playing well. Oh, Godwin has an easier matchup than a Surtain. Surtain's already shut down Metcalf, who's had two big games since then. George Pickens, who had a quality game this past week coming off of the Surtain matchup. So I think that's probably skewing it a little bit, the week three matchup. If I had to choose, though, I'd rather have Godwin rest of season right now, but it's close.
Yeah, I think it's close. Like, maybe back-to-back if you're doing aggressive season rankings, those two guys there. I feel like this does happen this is totally anecdotal, but it does feel like this happens with these two Bucks receivers every year. Whichever one of them goes first is not the guy. You want the guy that goes second here. That has been the case. I mean, even last year, like, Chris Godwin didn't go very high in drafts. Neither of these guys went very high in drafts, but he did go a little bit higher than Mike Evans last year, and then obviously Evans was a great pick. Godwin was a great pick this year. That's sort of where I'm at, though. Godwin, definitely great pick. He's a guy that's probably high-end wide receiver two, maybe low-end wide receiver one. Rest of the season, feel great about him. But I do think Evans makes for a nice maybe buy low right now, because it does feel like people are panicking. Like, I've gotten a lot of questions about Mike Evans, you know, other than the two touchdowns. Always my favorite. If you take away the two touchdowns in week two, in week one, he's actually had a really bad season. Well, those touchdowns do count. They get to go on your record here. You're right that even the week two matchup, they didn't throw very much, period. But we've talked about this, Sal, where you want to target the Lions in the slot. You don't want to throw on those perimeter corners, and especially with the pass rush that they have right now at this point. So I think that Eagles week four, Falcons week five, Saints week six, like, there's some matchups here where Mike Evans can get going. I still, despite what happened in week three, generally have faith in this offensive ecosystem. So I feel like if the Mike Evans manager in your league is panicking, I actually wouldn't mind like throwing an offer that way just to see what we've got here. Cause I don't see any personal drop off in his play.
You know, I agree with you to this point. And also, like, the run game's not doing anything as long as they keep giving Rashad White touches. So if you're going to get in second and maybe third in longs, it's only going to lead to more pass attempts and maybe just in general more pass first script. Like you said, they have some matchups against the Eagles. The Chiefs are coming up. The Ravens. These are spots where you might have to throw 35 to 40 times.
Do you see anything changing in that backfield, or is it just more coach speak?
Yeah, we got the coach speak of like Bucky Irving's going to earn more touches, which I mean, like if you're just watching the last 3 weeks, that makes sense. I think Rashad White's barely averaging 2 yards per carry right now. He was dealing with a groin injury heading into week three, so skews it a little bit. I would assume he's going to start to earn more touches, maybe not 50-50 heading into week four, but if this continues mid-season, I wouldn't be shocked after their bye if Bucky's in a split backfield completely.
Yeah, should definitely be rostered in all leagues. Probably, I think, Rashad White losing value by the week if he continues to play this way. But I'm definitely interested in Bucky Irving because he's looked good as a runner. And this, again, this is an offensive ecosystem I generally feel pretty good about despite what happened in week three. Okay, let's move on to my third stat here. And this is about the Chiefs. They said they were going to go back to throwing deep. So far, they have not. Patrick Mahomes has thrown just 5.4% of his passes 20 plus yards down the field, according to Pro Football Focus. That is the second lowest among quarterbacks this year. For context, he was at 10.6 in 2023, 9.7 in 2022, 10.5 in 2021, and 12.4% back in 2020. So this is a pretty big drop off. I also thought this stat from Rich Rebar, Lord Reeves, is pretty good as well. Patrick Mahomes has just one top 10 scoring fantasy week over his past 12 regular season games going back to last season. He's had just two top six scoring weeks since the start of last season. Let's be clear what this is not. This is not Chiefs panic or any of that stuff, you know, because last time people tried to freak out about the Chiefs offense, they won the Super Bowl. You might have remembered that. That happened last year. However, if we got to talk about fantasy every single week, Sal, we do have to talk about the production coming out of this passing game. I don't think Mahomes is playing poorly. I don't think this is a bad offense or any of that stuff. But from just a bottom line perspective, the numbers are not there. So we do at least have to talk about that and acknowledge that if we are doing fantasy analysis.
Yeah, I mean, it was the narrative all offseason that they wanted to throw deep. Everything out of training camp was all these 40-yard touchdowns to Worthy, to even Mecole Hardman, to Marquise Brown, who now they don't have. So I do think it's worth bringing up. Mahomes only has three completions of 20-plus yards this year. One of them was in week one, the broken play to Xavier Worthy against the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. So you're looking at an offense that ranks 17th in pass rate right now, just 58% of the time that they're passing the ball. It's what you're seeing last year. It's a lot of just these two high looks. It's the entire league. That's why if you notice like your fantasy matchups, you're barely breaking 100 in some of these. It's because there's just not a lot of production going on right now, which means a lot of Rashee Rice, which you're getting another massive game for him in terms of volume this past week. You're going to get a lot more carries. 17 carries went to Carson Steele in week three alone. And eventually, we're probably going to start to see some Travis Kelce or just more tight end usage underneath. Not a lot of deep chances here, which is why I'm pretty worried about Xavier Worthy. He had those two touchdowns in week one. They've kind of held him up to be a top 50 receiver so far, barely on the season. I just sold him in a league this morning, only 81 yards this season through three games. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned with the way defenses are playing them. Now, I do trust Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid. You have a first-round receiver. Maybe start to utilize him in different ways, but I'm not sure those are going to be beneficial ways for fantasy that we were hoping coming into the year.
Yeah, Andy Reid, talking about Xavier Worthy after the Sunday night game, he said Xavier Worthy, is doing a great job with learning the playbook. I pulled him off on a couple of routes just with some of what they were doing, but he had a number of routes there in the first 15, which are the scripted plays. I just chose to pull him off because of what they were doing. So he's doing a nice job for us. He'll have other games where he has more drafts. He did a nice job with the quick game stuff. We're using him on. So I think like, you read between the lines there. There's some things he can do and some things he can't. He's a rookie receiver in his third game. Okay. He's going into his fourth game here. I do think when I do rankings for Yahoo every week and you know, you just look at like the expert consensus, I always feel like Worthy is too high. Even the last 2 weeks I've felt he's in that kind of wide receiver 30 to 32 range. And for most people, that means if you have him, you're probably considering him as that wide receiver 3 or your flex or whatever. I just don't think we're there yet with him because I don't think the Chiefs are there yet with the usage of him. I don't think that, Patrick Mahomes like pressure stats are always tough because he's so good at moving in the pocket and navigating things. But I don't think the offensive line has played especially the left tackle position, has been a bit of a mess. I don't think he looks totally comfortable in the pocket there, Pat Mahomes, and I don't blame him. So, like, what's working in this offense right now is Rashee Rice. But that's kind of it. And the run game has been good. Carson Steele looked real. I thought he looked really good, you know, just kind of going downhill, being a positive force there as a rusher. I feel like if you picked him up off the waiver wire, you're feeling pretty good about that selection right now. But again, run game, Rashee Rice. The deep pass game's not there. I don't think Xavier Worthy is like that type of receiver anyways. The loss of Marquise Brown really matters here. And then the lack of Travis Kelce is a huge issue as well. So, like, if you have Pat Mahomes on your fantasy team, you're probably starting him every single week, but I don't know that you're necessarily expecting, you know, QB1 overall, like in the range of outcomes, because this offense just isn't constructed that way. And I think it's past time that we accept that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm maybe as the weeks go on, if this continues, we'll see a little bit more rushing out of Patrick Mahomes. We haven't really seen it as much right now, but we saw this past week, like Juju get involved for what, 60% of the routes he ran. And that's the type of receiver when you're playing a bunch of underneath stuff. If he's on the roster and you have Marquise Brown hurt and Xavier Worthy's just not really running those concepts as much right now, yeah, Juju's probably going to get on the field and you trust him there. At least he was doing that for your offense a couple of years ago. So that's kind of the spot we're at right now with the Chiefs. Again, real life, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, they know how to adjust. They literally just did it again last year on how defenses are playing them. It just might not be beneficial for fantasy.
Yeah, 40.5% of the routes for Juju Smith-Schuster. You know, 4.3 average depth of target. Rashee Rice is the leading receiver with 3.7 average depth of target. Like, this is just that. This is the offense that they are right now. They're running the ball well. They're trying to be efficient in the passing game. I think at some point, they might get back to attacking vertically, but right now, there's just nothing there that really says that's going to be the case. So it's definitely an issue for all these players besides Rashee Rice, who can just get 14 targets, averaging 3.7 average depth of target. Like, he is the perfect type of receiver for the offense of where they're at right now. Worthy's not. None of these other guys are. Like, that just, I think, is what it is at this point. But I'm with you that I'm a little concerned. If you drafted Xavier Worthy, or like you picked him up and you thought he's going to be like an every week starter, I'm not quite sure that we're there yet. Maybe at some point in the season, but not quite there at this point. Let's move on to a team that, like, I do feel bad about their offense right now. The Jacksonville Jaguars offense has consistently gotten worse the last 3 years. Jaguars net yards per pass attempt by season: 2022, 11th, 2023, 16th. So far this year, through three games, 28th. They're obviously, as you mentioned earlier, coming off a blowout loss to the Buffalo Bills on Monday night. And I don't even know where to start on this one, man, because it's a mess in Jacksonville. And I feel like we're going to have to start asking some very difficult questions about, like, coaching, front office. Certainly can't be happy with the quarterback play that you got on Monday night either. But I just feel like Jacksonville, Sal, might be rotten to the core at this point. And typically when that happens, yeah, we can sit here and say, like, all right, we like Brian Thomas Jr.'s role and, like, Travis Etienne, the whole thing. But typically when teams start going bad like this early in the season, I start getting worried about just a real big fall off for everything here. Like, it's the type of soil where no good fruit can grow.
Yeah, and now we're kind of going on. I mean, Lawrence was hurt towards the end of last year, an ankle injury, but we're starting to go on like a year and a half of this. So, like you mentioned, like, just some coaching stuff might come up. Press Taylor, what's going on with the offense and the play calling at this point? The offense, like you said, 28th in passing yards per play. They're around teams like the Titans and the Bears right now. They're averaging like 4.5 passing yards per play. 13 teams are averaging more yards per carry right now than the Jaguars are passing. And Trevor Lawrence is second. Yeah. No, it's rough. And Trevor Lawrence is right now the second worst quarterback in completion percentage. Only Anthony Richardson is worse. So that's how bad it is right now. Now, I don't know exactly why this is happening outside of the few things that I can think of right away. One, the offensive line coming into the season was a big concern, and the offensive line so far this year has been a concern. According to PFF, 27th right now in pass protection. Lawrence is top 10 in pressure rate. Okay, so that's part of it. And falling behind in games doesn't help with seeing even more pressure. And then just, like, what is their identity? I feel like I've been asking this for like 12 to 15 months now. Like, do you want to be a physical run team? They're not that. And the offensive line is a big reason why as well. Do you want to be a pass team? What is your just personnel? Who's your guy to get a bucket? You don't have Calvin Ridley this year. I'm not really sure it's Gabe Davis or Brian Thomas as a rookie. He could be an exciting player. Christian Kirk wasn't even out there for like the first 2 weeks for the most part. So, like, what is your identity? Week to week, it seems like it's changing. That doesn't help with Evan Ingram injured right now, the tight end either. But I'm just asking these questions. Like, on third down, who are you going to? And it seems like they don't really know right now.
Yeah, they don't really know. I don't really know what they know in Jacksonville right now. And yeah, I mean, the Gabe Davis thing, dude, like Gabe Davis is just out there doing Gabe Davis stuff, you know? I did not like that signing when they made it. I thought, okay, maybe it can make sense if they're going to keep Calvin Ridley and he's going to go to that flanker role and all that. But it feels like they just paid for the, like, a starting X receiver on the market, but he's just a guy that doesn't he's just not really a needle mover, you know? And I feel like this team does need more needle movers. Brian Thomas, really good player, but you're right, he is a rookie. And I think he has exceeded my expectations in terms of his immediate, like, ability to make immediate impact, because I thought he might take a little bit more time to ramp up, things like that. That's not been the case. I think he's been kind of ready to rock, but he's still a rookie, you know, very early in his rookie season. I don't think Christian Kirk has had a good season. I don't think that, obviously, Evan Ingram hasn't been healthy, but some of this does come, it comes back to identity. That's so, like, it's exactly the way to say it here, because what are the Jacksonville Jaguars beyond disappointing? Because right now their only identity is disappointment. And I do, like, we can talk about who's calling plays and the press tailor of it all, but, like, this is Doug Peterson's offense, man. And we're going on, like, 2017, the Super Bowl run with the Eagles, that's a hell of a long time ago, man. There's been mostly bad, I would say, Doug Peterson coaching jobs and good Doug Peterson coaching jobs over the last 5 years. And that's just, like, where we're at this point. So, from a fantasy perspective, you know, like I said, when things start going bad like this, like, we're starting to ask front office questions into week four, we're starting to ask coaching questions into week four, you know, maybe we get some change and it's one of those, like, spark moments. But for the most part, I feel pretty bad about Jacksonville and pretty much almost everybody attached to this offense.
Yeah. And, like, I think there's at least maybe some grace for fantasy, because I don't think Trevor Lawrence is one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL, at least to the way that he's playing right now. Maybe he's not the top 10 guy that everybody wanted him to be when he came out, or even heading into this season. Maybe the infrastructure is not there, the supporting cast, whatever it might be. But at least moving forward, you get a matchup against the Texans, then the Colts, which have just been just like the savior. They just helped the Bears get back on track from a fantasy perspective. So if we're looking at it from that regard, it looks good. But, like, who are you starting? Like, your flex options are, like, Brian Thomas and Christian Kirk at this point. You're probably starting Etienne. These are just things that are really not that appealing for fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing is, okay, great. We get to that week five matchup. They're playing the Colts. Great. You know, that can definitely boost the floor. I just don't know if there's that ceiling to access. Like, even the Bears, for all their problems in the past game, I at least still felt like with the way Roma Dunze was playing, with the guy we know DJ Moore is, and how much they were putting on Caleb Williams' plate, and how much he was, like, the results have not always been great, but I think he's executed at a high level what they're, like, from a pre-snap standpoint, from a processing standpoint, all of this stuff. So, like, again, there was good things to point to there that it's like, okay, if they play the Colts, that ceiling could maybe be accessed from a fantasy perspective. I just don't feel that way at all about Jacksonville. And I don't feel very good about the Bears offense and the structure and design of that. So that should tell you how deeply concerned I am about Jacksonville. By the way, can we just talk for 2 seconds about, you mentioned the Bears and the Colts matchup. DeAndre Swift is averaging like a yard a carry, bro. Like, what are we doing in the backfield? What is going on in the Bears run game?
Yeah, it's brutal. Like, I had this, like, what I thought was a smart take heading into the week. Like, oh, this is the matchup for Swift. He gets anything going, put him in a package deal and get rid of him. And it just got even worse for the guy. His role got his role reduced even more. He's, like, droppable in some and probably a lot of 10-team leagues right now if you don't have a deep bench. He's a droppable player. And the craziest part that I come back to, first player signed in free agency at any single position, yet now you're giving Roschon Johnson more touches. You were giving Travis Homer touches before he got hurt, and Khalil Herbert, and all these guys were already on your roster. So it's just interesting what's going on with Swift right now. It doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon.
It's not. Let me tell you, it might get a little bit better because it can't get worse. Like, I always say, yeah. whenever people say, well, it can't get worse, usually it still can get worse. I really don't think it can get worse than starting. Like, you just said, this guy's probably droppable. He's a starting running back for an NFL team, and he's playing more than 50% of the snaps. Like, his snap share has gone down in each of the 3 weeks, went from 70 to 66 to 53% last week. But, like, dude, my God. I mean, again, 1.84 yards per carry. I sold him a little short by saying a yard per carry average. He's 1.84. Fine. But that was a weird signing at the time. It didn't really make a lot of sense to me. It's pretty rough for the DeAndre Swift stuff. I just cannot remember the last time I thought, like, all right, this guy is a starting back for an NFL team, and you know they're actually running a lot of plays and all this, and it just you can't even consider playing him. So pretty brutal stuff. I just had to note that because I was with you. It's like if this doesn't happen for Swift this week, it's over. And it didn't happen for Swift this week.
Yeah, I want to make sure I credit this right. It might have been the Athletic football show. It was on Twitter, I believe. DeAndre Swift, he had 13 carries this past week. Zero of them were successful runs. So that's how it's at right now for DeAndre Swift.
Yeah, 0%. You don't want to be at 0%. All right, my final stat here, number five. I think Aaron Rodgers is starting to look better and better to me by the week. Rodgers has been under pressure on just 24% of his dropbacks, according to Pro Football Focus. Second fewest among quarterbacks to start three games this year. He is top 10 in passer rating when kept clean. He has a pretty outrageous 2.1 second time to throw on those plays, which is the fastest among quarterbacks to start three games. The only guy who's close is Tua, but obviously he has basically played like 1.5 games so far this year. It's a little bit reminiscent, Sal, of Big Ben's like final years where not a lot of mobility there. Although I'll give Rodgers credit. I thought he looked pretty spry and mobile on Thursday night against the Patriots. I thought that was just a all around great quarterback performance. There's some things here that he's not going to be able to do, which is fine, which is why he's getting the ball out so fast. That's not going to lead to a lot of vertical passing, which I think has been some of the issues with the Garrett Wilson stuff. I think they sort of need to adjust his route tree to more of what Rodgers can do at this point. But by and large, I just think Rodgers has looked better from week one to week two to week three. And I think that's a noticeable development for pretty much everybody in this offense.
Yeah, like despite the Achilles tear and coming back from that, he just still looks like Aaron frickin' Rodgers at this point. He's just sixth in EPA per passing play right now. And he said it after the game, like all he's seeing this season is two high shells. And I think he's just slowly getting into a rhythm on this offense. The running backs, that's why they're involved in the passing game a lot right now. And that's leading to a lot of success. And it's like we're not even getting the whole version of this offense untapped yet. It is only through 3 weeks. We don't really have Garrett Wilson getting unlocked to this point. You're seeing Alan Lazard. You're seeing Mike Williams get a little bit ramped up this past week. Had a couple of receptions on four targets. So I think it can get even better once you get Garrett Wilson starting to come through, especially on any deeper concepts that do open up. But the offensive line, they put a ton of investment in it, maybe the most improved offensive line this offseason, and that's showing at least enough through these first three games for Rodgers to look good, to look poised, to look confident back there. He just knows what he's doing. I mean, it's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's reading defenses, and it's working right now. Every week, it seems like it's slowly getting better, and in week three, I think we saw that a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was an overall encouraging performance for this entire offense. Look, like the fact that Alan Lazard is just a functional NFL receiver and like a good role player, I think can be good for the offense over the long term. It can be good for Garrett Wilson over the long term. You know, Aaron Rodgers joked after the game that, you know, why, you know, Garrett Wilson, why hasn't it been efficient yet? And he said, well, it's been Mel Kiper's, you know, worst nightmare, the too high coverage and stuff like that for Garrett Wilson. So that is true. I think the more that there are other credible threats here, the more Wilson will be freed up. And you know, the air yard share has been there. The target share has been there. And I think the fact that Rodgers has looked better is there as well. But I do think it is, and this is going to be tough because it's Nate Hackett. I do think it comes back to coaching. Like, we got to get Wilson's route tree a little more lined up with what Rodgers can do at this point, which is when he's kept clean, he wants to get rid of that ball so that there's no, I think the mobility was really nice in week three, but for the most part, that's not what you want him doing at this stage of his career. So we'll see. I feel pretty good about Rodgers at this point. And I do think that will trickle down to Garrett Wilson too. So not a guy I'm panicking on, even though it does feel like there is some concern in the streets for Garrett Wilson. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll get into Sal's five stats that you need to know coming out of week three right after this. All right, we're back. Sal, hit me with your first stat that people need to know.
Yeah, we go from one soon-to-be Hall of Famer to maybe another one, a late bloomer here in Sam Darnold of the Minnesota Vikings. 3-0. I think the MVP candidate, kind of like that Brock Purdy MVP candidate from last year, a lot of good coaching, and he's just doing what he needs to do right now, even created on his own at times. Top five in yards per attempt, 68% completion. He's a top five fantasy QB available in 71% of Yahoo leagues right now, so that's another thing going on. And he's doing it without Jordan Addison, without TJ Hawkinson, with Justin Jefferson hobbled at times for a quarter or two during this stretch. I mean, he looks good at this point. Now, I don't know if it's all him. I think it's a lot of Kevin O'Connell, especially this past week. But he's doing enough out there, at least in my opinion, to not be available in over 70% of leagues. When guys like Mahomes and Anthony Richardson are struggling right now and we're top 10 picks for you, this could be, or top 10 quarterback picks in drafts, this could be kind of your security blanket and pick up off the waivers before, well, I guess they'll run by the time this is, but if he's still out there on your waivers, somebody to snag.
Yeah, and look, by the way, they have a top five defense, bare minimum. They're third in EPA per play. They're fourth, in success rate. Allowed on defense are the Minnesota Vikings. So too early. We don't need to, you know, be doing all respect to guys like Frank Schwab who do a great job with power rankings and things like that. We don't need to be crowning teams 3 weeks into the season. But damn, like the Vikings have been one of the best teams in the NFL through 3 weeks, period. And a lot of it does, I think, come back to coaching. Got to give Kevin O'Connell a ton of credit for what's going on here, but you got to give Sam Darnold a ton of credit here as well. And, you know, I was certainly skeptical of like, all right, we're just going to start Sam Darnold for 17 weeks and let it ride. So far, again, three games, it's early. Darnold can always have some tough moments. He's definitely not been flawless this year, but he's been more than good enough for this offense. And I think from a fantasy perspective, yeah, like, We're not even working with a stacked deck here. You know, at some point, Addison will get back. At some point, Hockenson maybe will be able to contribute in a meaningful way. So, yeah, Darnold, to me, you know, in games where, at least certainly last week, I was like, okay, Houston Texans, the defense is good, but this should be a higher scoring game. It didn't necessarily turn into like some crazy high scoring affair on one side of the ball, Houston's. But at the same time, like, that was the type of matchup where I wanted to start Darnold. You know, week four against the Packers, if Jordan Love is back, probably going to want to start Sam Darnold there. They do go on a bye in week six, but week seven against the Lions, week eight against the Rams, week nine against the Colts, week 10 against the Jaguars. Like, there's a lot of spots here, Sal, where I think Sam Darnold is going to be a fantasy QB1.
Yeah, and I think you start him in a lot of leagues in week four against the Packers. Their defense like looks good. I think it's being propped up by the Anthony Richardson, Will Levis matchups. They've been an opportunistic defense from an interception standpoint because of those matchups. But I think you can get away with it against that secondary right now. And yeah, Darnold is somebody that I want to be playing if you're in a league where you don't have one of those top five quarterbacks. At least have him as an option in these weeks. The offensive line is good. They have the tackles, Darrishaw, O'Neal. They have the wide receiver in Jefferson. They kind of have these key positions down and the coach, and it's panning out right now for Darnold.
Jalen Naylor's played good too. He's looked good for this Minnesota Vikings team. Week five, man, international game, 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Sam Darnold versus the New York Jets, big time revenge game. So that'll probably be the week, just because like life isn't fair. That'll probably be the week that like Sam Darnold comes back to earth. That would actually suck. I would really hate that. I would like for Sam Darnold to get a nice little revenge on the Jets there. Revenge games, please give me a break. Okay, we move from maybe the second best quarterback in the NFL to the best quarterback in the NFL, Sal, who plays for the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, let's go over to Andy Dalton here. I mean, I was going to say they maybe wish they still had Sam Darnold, but not after last week, what we saw to Andy Dalton, vintage Andy Dalton. I mean, this was one of maybe the best games I've watched him play. He was probably a top five, if not better, quarterback on the week, Dalton. And it led to Deontay Johnson seeing a career high 122 yards. He finds the end zone. He sees a 38% target share in this game. Now, Adam Thielen pulls his hamstring in the second half. Usually this is like a 2-week recovery timeline. He's a 34-year-old receiver, could last even longer. When Thielen left that game, Deontay still saw a strong target share, which you would expect, 35% for that second half. So yeah, I'm looking at this right now. The offense scored on 64% of their drives with Andy Dalton in week three, as opposed to the first 2 weeks with Bryce Young, it was just 12% of their drives. So it looked better. It was just 1 week, but this is what you're going to get when you have protection. Like everything we thought this offseason, for the Panthers, they got the coach in Canales. They spent big on the guards, Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt. They got the weapons in Deontay and drafted Xavier Legette. Like everything's supposed to be there for Bryce Young. But now it's happening for Andy Dalton, and we just kind of saw it play out in week three. So moving forward, Chuba Hubbard had the big game as well. Deontay Johnson. Now they have a matchup against Cincinnati, which we just saw the Commanders on Monday night go off and get right against. I think these guys are must-starts in week four. And moving forward, I feel pretty good about them on my team.
Feel great about them. The classic, the meme of Tony Soprano's, you know, his therapist, like, last week you told me it was over, and now you're telling me we're back. What has changed? It's like Andy Dalton has changed. I mean, unbelievable stuff here. It does go back to the conversation I had with Nate last week about, you know, like why is scoring down and the, you know, some of these young quarterbacks struggling right now. And then you just get a well-designed offense with pretty good players and a veteran quarterback who just has seen it, done it, has a catalog of all these coverages and things like that. Okay, here's what I do. Get to the line of scrimmage. This pressure's coming. I do this to adjust it, the whole thing. Like, Andy Dalton's kind of that guy. Andy Dalton is basically the poor man's Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield or any of these like veteran quarterbacks running a pretty decent offense right now. Yeah, that is like the weirdest analogy I think I've ever made. But it kind of makes sense to me, like Dalton taking over this offense, because you watched it in the first 2 weeks, like on film, there are throws to be made. If Bryce Young would just hang back there and let it rip, I don't think he sees the field well. I don't think I don't think there was confidence with Bryce Young. Maybe they get back to starting him at some point. I have no idea. But Canales said it after the game. Yeah, Andy Dalton's our quarterback right now because Andy Dalton gives us the best chance to win. And that is just objectively true. I mean, Sal, I'm watching back that game and I'm seeing Diontae Johnson get intermediate targets over the middle. This guy hasn't had a quarterback that could, I mean, this is disgusting to say, but he hasn't had a quarterback that could do that pretty much ever in his entire career. Like, and he did not play in an offensive system in Pittsburgh that emphasized intermediate targets over the middle of the field, despite like that's the best way to attack these two high defenses and things like that. So that's number one. Even Xavier Leggett, who did run fewer routes overall than Jonathan Mingo in this game. But I mean, I do think Leggett probably long-term obviously has more upside. But he's getting like his big plays are all coming on crossing routes, which is exactly what you'd want. He's a limited receiver, but he can do those things. So, yeah, it's just weird to say like Andy Dalton gets out there. He plays a great game. We'll see how long it lasts. But you're so right to say that everything we kind of envisioned this offense could be if Bryce Young was up to the task, which clearly he's not, did come to fruition with Dalton under center in week three.
Yeah, and it just leads me to think like, okay, Deontay's on your team. That's great. You're probably not getting him now in trades. Chuba Hubbard, maybe like a trade away with Jonathan Brooks coming back soon, and that's a trade target. But then Xavier Leggett, that's the name you just said right there. Like, that's the low guy in this offense available on like almost every single waiver wire in Yahoo that, yeah, he ran less routes, like you said, than Mingo, but first round pick, 220 pounds, 4.39 speed, these crossing routes, that's going to lead to some big plays if this even looks anything like it did in week three with Dalton out there. So I think Leggett's an interesting player. First round talent, that big of a receiver. Yeah, I kind of want that on my team.
Do you know who the Panthers play in week four, Sal Vetri?
The Cincinnati Bengals, I believe.
Do the Cincinnati Bengals have a good defense? Pressing question.
No. I'm pretty sure Terry McLaurin just got unlocked against them the other night.
Yeah. So Terry, another quarterback revenge game there. Andy Dalton versus the Bengals. Yeah, man. I mean, it just feels great coming after what we saw out of week three, coming into this week against the Bengals defense that clearly has a ton of issues right now. Yeah, I feel great about Diontae, feel great about Chuba Hubbard. And yeah, I think Xavier Leggett may be an interesting kind of deeper stash for people right now. Okay. Talk about good vibes. Got that in Carolina. A lot of bad vibes here for your third stat.
Yeah, bad vibes, but I might have a different overall takeaway about it. Mark Andrews' usage on the year, but more importantly in week three, he played just 33% of the snaps. And depending on where you look, he either ran four routes or six routes. I kind of see some conflicting data right now. But overall, it just led to one target in this game. Isaiah Likely ran more routes. He was seeing more passing game usage. And it wasn't good for Andrews. Now through three games, he's earned just eight targets, six catches, 65 yards, running just 68% of the routes. I mean, for context, you want that number to be 80, 85% for your tight end, especially if you spent a fourth round pick on him in fantasy, if not higher. So it's not great. It's a slow start. We all saw it. We got panicked the first game Thursday Night Football against the Chiefs. And now coming out of week three, it looks even worse. But a couple of things to at least add some context. Mm-hmm. The Ravens only threw 15 times in week three. They got up by three or four scores on the Cowboys. So, you know, they just didn't have to pass. So if he's running six routes on 15, still not good, but it's not like they were really trying to pass and get their best passing personnel out there for those plays. Another thing here, according to PFF, 2022, Mark Andrews pass blocked on one snap. 2023, seven snaps. So far this season, already seven. Now, that doesn't sound like anything crazy, but if that was to continue over the course of the year, he's pass blocking now 40 to 50 snaps. He's losing probably 8 to 10 to 12 targets on the season, and that starts to add up for these fantasy performances. So there is concerns here. I don't know if it's the ankle surgery from last year, tightrope. I don't know if it's the car accident from this offseason. I don't know if it's the bad offensive line and he has to block more to help out there. Maybe it's a combo of all these things, but there's definitely reason to be panicked, but I'm a sicko. This morning, I bought low on Mark Andrews. I'm a sicko through three weeks, and I bought low on Mark Andrews. If you can get the right price, I traded a Cortland Sutton, a fifth wide receiver on my team, a depth piece. Those are the types of things I want to be looking at right now because he still just turned 29 years old like 2 weeks ago. Happy birthday, Mark Andrews. I still believe that this guy is a talented player and didn't just fall off the face of the earth after less than a month of the season. So that's my takeaway on it. Everything looks bad, but things can change just like the Panthers so quickly in 1 week. So I'm actually buying low, and I did this morning.
I mean, hey, yeah, say it with your chest, man. We love to see it. Like, week four matchup Sunday night, Buffalo Bills. Like, would anybody be surprised if Mark Andrews has a nice performance there? I wouldn't. Certainly a good defense, definitely, but potentially a high-scoring game. They're going to need Andrews there. A little bit of a weird script against the Cowboys because, obviously, they got ahead in that game. The Cowboys almost came back, so that's another kind of piece of context there. But you're right. Like, it's a little bit similar to the Tank Dell thing where a previous injury, something happens. Like, I mean, Tank Dell gets shot. Mark Andrews is in a car accident. They're working in some new things here from an offensive line perspective. Is Andrews just being asked to be a blocker more? Yeah, it could be a little bit of this, a little bit of that, little like the whole thing, like where it's, I think that's kind of the case with Tank Dell. I think that could be the case with Mark Andrews here. He's a little bit of an older player for sure. Coming off that injury, that does maybe kind of affect who he is, but it's just tough right now at the tight end position. Cause yeah, if you drafted Mark Andrews, you're pretty pissed about it. But I mean, dude, nobody's happy with any of their tight end picks this year outside of Trey McBride. Even Brock Bowers didn't come through against Panthers defense in week three. So I'm with you that you probably don't have a solution at tight end. Maybe Mark Andrews isn't a solution, but I think, yeah, trading some depth just to get him and figure it out. Why not?
Yeah, like if we redrafted today, he's not going to be a fourth round pick in fantasy. Sure. But is he gonna really fall to the 10th, 11th, or 12th round in drafts? No. People will probably start taking stabs on him in like 6th, 7th, 8th round because they're going to say, oh, it's only been 3 weeks when we've literally seen 4 to 5 years of production. And it's not like they added any of these insanely new talented pieces. Like it's Zay Flowers, who was there last year, a talented player. It's Bateman, who's been there for a while. It's Isaiah Likely, who, yeah, maybe he's taking a step forward, but since week one, we really haven't seen that either. So I'm just not sold that Mark Andrews of all of a sudden is an offensive lineman for this team and not going to be out there as a main passing game option. By week 8, by week 9, I think we look up and he's once again like a top 5 weekly tight end in fantasy.
I mentioned that Bills matchup in week 4, Bengals in week 5, Commanders in week 6. Those are two really good matchups for passing game players. So, yeah, I'd be, if we're still having the same exact Mark Andrews conversation by week 8, I'd be a little bit surprised. But I do understand why people are pissed about it so far. Totally get that. I just think I'm with you that overall the outcomes could be better as we continue to roll on. Pretty much couldn't be better. If you're a wide receiver going against this secondary, you want to talk about here in your fourth point.
Yeah, the Rams secondary right now, it's just a fantasy wonderland. They're currently allowing 9 passing yards per play, according to NFL Pro, the most in the NFL. 18% more than even the Commanders, who we've just been seen giving it up. Joe Burrow and the Bengals just had over 300 yards against them. So, I mean, week one, Jameson Williams, 130 total yards and a touchdown. Marvin Harrison, week two, 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. The greatest receiver of all time, Juwan Jennings, 175 yards and 3 touchdowns in week 3. It's just looking, if you have any receiver against this team, any type of playmaker in the passing game, a tight end, it's looking good. And it does start with the defensive line. They're generating pressure at the 28th highest rate, not great right now. They're dealing with injuries. Quarterbacks have tons of time to throw against them, the most time in the NFL to throw against them right now. So all this is a recipe for success for opposing offenses, which leads me to the week 4 matchup, the Chicago Bears against the Rams. Start your DJ Moores. Start your Roma Dunzes. We have to see what happens with Keenan Allen. Start your Cole Kmet. All these guys had a great matchup last week and paid off. And once again, I think you're starting them this week in what is looks like the best matchup in all of fantasy for passing game weapons.
Yeah, absolutely love it. Roma Dunze looked, I maintained that he looked really good on film in the first 2 weeks. And then week 3, it kind of all comes together for him. 21.3 average depth of target. He's definitely the vertical guy in this offense, which, I mean, he should be because that's where he wins. DJ Moore getting more of those like layup looks, like to see that as well. Odunze, definitely feel really good about him going into this matchup for sure. I mean, Juwan Jennings, shout out to Juwan Jennings, bro. A guy who's known as like a third down player, you know, a blocking receiver. Hey, no block, no rock. Juwan Jennings gets the rock a ton here in week 3. Yeah, this Rams defense is just like fantasy gold for all of the players going against them. In week 6, they get the Packers as well. That could be like, you know, I think Jordan Love probably, excuse me, week five. In week five, they get the Packers. That could be Jordan Love's kind of like return to form game, because obviously I think it sounds like he's going to play in week four, but, you know, might not be 100%. So, yeah, your Jaden Reed's in week five. All these guys are probably going to go off too. Certainly, this was the gamble that the Rams made by kind of, you know, I don't know, taking a wash on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they certainly they added some younger players, but they lost Raheem Morris, lost Aaron Donald. That was always going to be tough. It's been tough for the Rams on defense so far. But yeah, I'm with you. All three of those Bears guys are starts here in week number four. Okay, give me your final point here, Sal, before we get to your moves to make.
Yeah, I want to talk about Aaron Jones, who was kind of a polarizing fantasy option this offseason. He went to a new team. For running backs changing teams, that could always be a little bit of a concern when you're older. He's going to turn 30 this year. There were injury concerns coming off of last season. And so far through three games, he's a top five running back in fantasy, in running back EPA per rush. Everything looks great. He's coming off of another top 10 finish where he had 148 total yards, 24 touches, look great once again. And honestly, the backfield, Ty Chandler's there, sure, but he's commanding it. 68% of the rush attempts for Jones, the RB carries, 60% of the snaps. And I like the way that they're using him. I like the way Kevin O'Connell is using him. Anytime you have Justin Jefferson out there, you might get a little bit of softer boxes for Aaron Jones. We've seen that in some of these matchups. Some of them, they've been stacked as well. But I like how he's using the passing game. O'Connell's putting him in there as a priority read. Like his touchdown in the receiving game this past week, he was the priority on that option. He's getting scheme production there. We know what he could do on the ground. The whole concern, like I said this offseason, can this guy stay healthy? Maybe towards the end of the season, later in the season for an older player, that starts to come into play. But right now, I actually think Aaron Jones is like a buy high player, because the way he's playing in this offense, it's looking pretty good. And we talked about all these revenge games. It's coming for him in week four against the Packers.
Boom. There we go. Yeah. And I think Packers defense has been a little mixed so far through the first 3 weeks. Some good performances for sure. But like you mentioned, are those a little bit, you know, let's adjust to the personnel, the guys that we're going against. And I'm with you that like from a, It's tough to buy a guy like that's been this good in fantasy for the most part, but I mean, he's definitely still like a mid to high ish RB2, I think, in like rest of season rankings and things like that. But like, if you needed a guy that's going to be productive right now, I think I could totally understand buying Aaron Jones. And maybe if you want to sell like a guy that's been good so far and kind of want to get like that 2-for-1 deal, I think that's totally fair as well. I mean, I don't know. I'm with you that I think Aaron Jones, it's been great so far this season, and it feels like the best could still be to come if he just stays healthy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we're looking at it, the offensive line, we kind of touched on it earlier with Sam Darnold. That's been looking good to this point. He seems dynamic and explosive on the ground in terms of 10-plus yard runs. He's top 10 in that. Yards per play is all there. I think it's looking good at this point. And yeah, rest of season, like depending on what your roster looks like, if you're one of these teams that has maybe survived like Puka Nacua going down and you're 2-1 or somehow 3-0 without your first or second round pick, and you could package a Puka maybe straight up for Aaron Jones, or Puka plus somebody else, a J.K. Dobbins, maybe not that high of a player, but something in there, Devin Singletary. I do think I want Aaron Jones. I think he's a top 10 back rest of season.
I like it. Yeah, there's a lot of players, like I said, rest of season rankings that, you know, you could probably just get straight up 1-for-1 that Sal might rather have than, you know, that Sal would rather have Aaron Jones over going forward. So I think that's really interesting. Okay, let's toss to a quick break. When we come back, we've got Sal's three moves to make heading into week four right after this. We're back. Sal, you've got three moves for the people to make here, starting with something you kind of teased earlier when talking about the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I want to be buying Jonathan Brooks. As of right now, all signs point to him returning in week five off the PUP list. According to Deepak Chona, who is a Harvard-trained sports surgeon, so I feel like he knows what he's doing here, Brooks should be 85% healthy, good to go, right when he returns in week five. There's no setbacks reported as of now. And by week nine, he should have a full workload. And that's like the latest by week nine. So I'm fine with that. Like, if I have to buy him right now and for a couple weeks he's getting ramped up, that's my expectation going into it. That's what I'll try and pay going into it in a trade. And then right Week 9, heading into your fantasy playoffs and more, that could be a guy who, if we think about these past seasons, Isaiah Pacheco, years ago with Miles Sanders, these running backs who just come on, Breece Hall last year, towards the end of the year, and can be maybe not the number one overall running back, but a top 20, a top 15 guy that you feel strongly in a flex spot, in an RB2 spot, and right now maybe you could trade a Rico Dowdle for him or something like that as he's on the bench of maybe the 0-3 team in your league or the 1-2 in the PUP spot getting 0 points. Give him a Rico Dowdle and somebody else, and there you go. Maybe some fab budget as well, and you're in a spot where you have Jonathan Brooks with, at least in my opinion, some outlook. This is a second overall pick. They traded up for him. He could do it all in college. He looked good in college. And I think behind this offensive line, that's solid. And this might seem bold, but even off of the big game for Chuba Hubbard, I trade him 1-for-1 for Jonathan Brooks right now.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think by the end of the year, Brooks will be getting more run than Hubbard. It might be like a little bit of a split, but that's okay. Almost every running back is in a little bit of a split at this point, but yeah, that week 11 bye for the Panthers, I think, is the key date here. And look, I get it. It's week 4. We're talking about week 11, and we got a long way to go. I mean, we're coming off a great Andy Dalton performance, but who knows what's going to happen. Like, the Panthers could turn back to Bryce Young at some point. I know Diana Russini from The Athletic had a report, basically said, like, don't listen to anything the Panthers say. It is over. It's over for Bryce Young in Carolina. And I mean, I think that was before. I could be wrong here, so totally don't hold me accountable for this. But like, I think that was before what happened in week 3 with Andy Dalton. Just like, that's where this situation is at with Bryce Young. Certainly, like I said, Dalton can play his way out of this job. Bryce Young can get back out there. But you think about a rookie, number one, we always talk about the post-bye rookie bump. Number two, a guy that's going to be healthier at that point of the season, certainly, than he is right now, coming off a week of rest. Chiefs, Bucks, Eagles, Cowboys, Cardinals, Bucks again, from weeks 12 to 17. Some, if Dalton still has this offense firing on all cylinders, there could be some interesting higher scoring matchups there for Jonathan Brooks and everybody involved in Carolina here.
Yeah, and he could be a 3-down back by that point. I mean, 220 pounds, can pass protect. His final 8 college games, he averaged 160 total yards. This is a productive player that I think all the hype has just cooled off because of this injury, and really an injury from last year that he's still recovering from. So he's somebody I'm trying to buy right now.
Yeah, for sure. I like that call a lot, and I don't think it would take too much to get it done, you know, just because of, like you said, He's been accumulating no points for people out there. Certainly some people drafted realize that they're not freaking out about it. But I think specifically the best piece of advice there, Sal, is like, if the team that has Brooks is 3-0, maybe don't go knocking on that door, because they kind of know what they're waiting for. But an 0-3 team that's in a little bit of panic mode, that's where you can sort of be the wolf and strike there. Just one Panthers note, because we're finding this out as we are recording this. They did indeed place Adam Thielen on IR with a hamstring injury, so he's going to miss at least 4 games. He'll miss the game against the Bengals, the Bears, the Falcons, and then the Commanders in week 7, so he could realistically, at best, come back in week 8. Okay, let's move on to your next one. This is a sell-high candidate here.
Yeah, sell-high candidate is going to be Dallas Goedert, the number one overall tight end in fantasy, mostly because of what he did in week 3, where he had a career high 170 yards, 25 fantasy points, depending on your league scoring. So this might seem crazy. Like, emotionally, you're like, this guy just won me my week. This is great. I have the number one tight end. Why would I sell him? Let's just add some context. He had a 31% target share in this game, his third highest over the past 3 seasons. And he did it in a game where AJ Brown didn't play, Devonta Smith left early. Heck, the wide receiver 3, Britton Covey, left in this game as well. So they were just down to Saquon Barkley and Dallas Goedert is like the only guys that they were going to in the second half of that game. But we could just be like a week away. Devonta Smith had a concussion, maybe misses a week. AJ Brown could be returning this week, if not, probably the week after that. So maybe you get one more week of this strong usage for Goddard, but then it's back to a 15% target share. He's just kind of one of those guys you're hoping scores a touchdown to get by. It's probably the best sell high moment you have for this guy. If you can 1-for-1 position swap him for Brock Bowers, if you can trade him for T. Higgins, Tank Dell, Zay Flowers, any of these guys off of a massive week, and these are trades that have happened right now according to Fantasy Calc database, tracks a bunch of trades, this is what I would do. I would just get rid of him as soon as you can. The waiver wire, I'm fine taking a Noah Font if I can get a T. Higgins in return for Dallas Goedert.
I like it. It's fairly bold, just because he certainly, from an emotional standpoint, like you said, probably won some people matchups. You know, if they started him, right? Like, that's another thing. I think there is probably some, I don't know what his start percentage was in Yahoo, but there's probably some people that are like, I'm not getting very much here. I'll go ahead and not play him or whatever. Play some streamer over him. Definitely hate yourself this morning for doing that after you caught 10 passes. But, you know, so maybe they're even those people definitely probably don't want to part with him. But I really think this is smart, just because it's not like his peripheral data has been that much better than the rest of the tight end you know, kind of landmine what it's been this year. It's just the results have been good based on what we saw last week. But still, when AJ Brown gets back, he's going to get a ton of looks. When Smith is playing, he's going to get a ton of looks. And it's just Goddard is third in the pecking order. And yeah, I mean, shoot, like, people dropped Cole Kmet, and he's the tight end three on the season now based off pretty much just one game. That's just where the position is right now. So I'm with you thinking that Goddard's probably not that far ahead of the field, even though it looks like that from a results standpoint.
Yeah, and the whole point is just to get, like, more sustainable options. Like, if you're talking about, like, the guys I mentioned, Zay Flowers, he's a wide receiver one in his offense. Tank Dell, he's going to have upside weeks as well, came along this past week. Just get more sustainable options that you feel good that they're actually on your roster and your lineup, as opposed to Goddard, who in 2 or 3 weeks, you know you're not getting that type of performance again. He's literally had that target share 3 times in 3 years.
All right, one of those receivers that you mentioned was T. Higgins. That is your final move to make.
Yeah, T. Higgins is somebody I've been trying to buy the last couple of weeks in leagues. Anytime a guy is hurt, they're not picking up fantasy points like a Jonathan Brooks. They're usually just easier to get. There's just been no recency bias attached to them in a positive way. In Monday Night Football, he returns. There were some concerns on, will his role be limited coming off of the hamstring? He wasn't. According to PFF, 90% of the snaps, 95% of the routes run in this game, and he saw 6 targets. So that's solid. It only translated to 39 yards, though, on those 6 targets. Jamar Chase was having the big 118-yard game, 2 touchdowns. So because of that, because of Jamar Chase going off, T. Higgins not finding the end zone or having a 60-70-yard game, there's kind of this buy low window right now. And I think just honestly, for the last year and a half, T. Higgins has this stain on him. Last year, he was banged up. He was injured. He finishes the wide receiver 40. That's not a true representation of this guy's talent. Joe Burrow was hurt to start the year. Joe Burrow was hurt to end the year. Higgins had like 1 or 2 healthy games last year with Burrow. But according to RotoViz, in his career with Burrow, he averages over 14 fantasy points per game. That's a borderline top 20 receiver. That's what we kind of know him as. And that's a guy that you can trade for right now and probably buy pretty low on him because he hasn't done anything this year or really last year. So I'm trying to buy T. Higgins. This is a guy, like I said earlier, I would trade a Dallas Goedert for. I would trade T. Higgins for really any receiver this past week that maybe popped off. I'm trying to dish him for Xavier Worthy in some leagues. Some people are trying to take that bait. Some people aren't. But that's a guy right now that I would just rather have, T. Higgins, the number 2 receiver, just like a Worthy, except in an offense that I feel maybe a little bit better about and a little bit more concrete about the type of player T. Higgins is.
Yeah, and like the Bengals defense, obviously disgusting performance on Monday night, but man, great. I thought just real solid, good performance from the offense overall. You know, T. Higgins probably should have probably drew a pass interference. It should have been called on the 2-point conversion play. Certainly could have had a much better looking night overall. And I guarantee you, yeah, people are going to, from an emotional standpoint, again, I love thinking about this from like a psychology standpoint. Like, okay, I waited for T. Higgins for 2 weeks. God, this guy's always hurt. Comes back. Oh, he's got this matchup against the Commanders. The Commanders defense is terrible. He gives me, you know, 39 yards or whatever. People are going to be upset about that. But this might be the last time to do it, Sal, because they do play the Panthers in week 4. So, second week back, Panthers defense still not good. So, look, maybe there's a chance that we get another meh performance from T. Higgins just because, you know, Andre Yoshivas is involved. Mike Gesicki's involved a little bit here. I would say the Bengals offense still good, but not great. They did just lose Trent Brown for the season. I would say there's a chance. I'm not saying it's a lock to T. Higgins. Like, let's go get him right now. It's rest of the season. We're firing on all cylinders, whatever. But there is a chance here that this is the final time to buy T. Higgins because of this week 4 matchup.
Yeah, exactly. And the matchup's great. And if, like, he was a 5th-round pick in most fantasy leagues this summer, I thought that was even a little bit low. And if we redrafted today, he'd probably still be like a 5th-round pick, maybe even 6th-round pick. So I think you're getting the same type of player, except the perception on him and maybe the perceived value is lower, even though it's not. So that's the type of guys I want to be targeting. I would go Jonathan Brooks, number 1 buy low priority, and then T. Higgins is number 2 for me this week.
Love it. All right, buddy, that's going to do it for us today. Sal, appreciate you, as always, giving us the moves to make here as we head into each and every week. Let the people know what else you're working on this week they can check out.
Yeah, we gave you a little sample of the trades, the buys and sells. That will go up in full with 4 more players, 7 total, on Wednesday morning on Yahoo. Thursday will be the best matchups to exploit at each position for fantasy. And then Friday, sort of a key findings, of sort of the written article of this type of a podcast, like the stats that I want you to know about going into week 4.
Boom. Yeah, definitely check out Sal's buy low, the trade advice piece, because you're going to need it. All right. It's that time of the year where we're starting to, like, some people are accepting.
Yeah,
new
bye
realities.
Weeks are coming up.
But yeah, bye weeks are coming up too. So it's about that time to start making some trades in your fantasy leagues. That is going to do it for us today. Like I said, on Thursday, tomorrow, the Fantasy Film Room is back with Nate Tice. We have a ton of great topics to dive into, and we'll preview a Thursday night NFC East banger. against the Cowboys and the Giants. Until then, we're out.